Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and it looks like we're going to have an interesting primary for the Democratic governor's race. Oh, I know, gubernatorial race in the next 16 months or so. Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist announced that he is running, as expected, and he'll go up against Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and Genesee County Sheriff Chris Swanson. Of course, Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan chose to run as an independent because he'd rather help a Republican win. Duggan says he wants bipartisanship again and wants to be viewed as a moderate, whatever the hell that is, which means he's more than happy, more than thrilled to help a MAGA Republican Party that's allowing and working with corporate authoritarianism. So well done, Mike Duggan, well done. Anyway, Gilchrist is trying to become Michigan's first black governor and no doubt has an impressive record. And he said this in his speech this weekend. It struck a note with me. So this is the quote. President Trump is like an arsonist against all of our economic stability and growth. The tariffs that are so reckless, they will set fire for workers' paychecks, businesses' balance sheets, family budgets, and pharmacists' bottom lines. The cuts to Medicaid, let me be really clear, they will kill people faster. Wow. Now, those are the kinds of words his boss, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, maybe should utilize from time to time rather than this, we are the world, let's all hold hands with MAGA Republicans and Dear Leader Trump and Elon Musk as they destroy the lives of millions and millions of people in order to enrich themselves. I mean, I wish that she'd let people know that she hears them, and that she understands why so many people out there are afraid and are so uncertain of their futures. All right, look, I understand. I understand Whitmer's point that her job is to ensure that Michigan gets the best deal from the federal government, and if that means sitting next to Dear Leader instead of speaking at our party state convention, whatever, I guess. But you know what? If I give her that one, fine. But she can do two things at once. And she can also let the people who stood with her when Dear Leader and his people threatened her back during COVID, that she hears them and will do whatever it takes to fortify Michigan against authoritarianism under her watch. She can do two things at once, but she's only choosing to do one thing right now. At least Garland Gilchrist understands where we are right now in American history. He understands that point, and he didn't shy away from it. I think it's safe to say that as of right now, it's a two-person race between Benson and Gilchrist. I mean, maybe Swanson does make a move. We'll have to see. I don't know. Regardless, the person who best articulates a strong, populist, working agenda will be the one who will become the party's nominee. But for Michigan, that is the winning strategy. The question is, who's bold enough to take that strategy and run with it? Please follow me on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Facebook. Left of Lansing is also on YouTube, and you can subscribe to all my stuff there. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. And yes, give it a good 5-star review. Okay, I'll take 4 if, you know, you want to make sure that I'm working harder, that my ego doesn't get too high. Fine, you can give me a 4-star review as well. But regardless, just subscribe to the show because subscriptions are important. And that's the same for all of the other fantastic progressive Michigan podcasts that we've got here, and even the national ones too. We're all doing our best in trying to spread the word on behalf of the working class and on behalf of democracy. So help them all out too. Coming up in a few moments, I'll be checking in with a good friend, Austin Marsman, who's just been elected as chair of the Young Democrats of Michigan. Now, Austin's been involved in politics for virtually his entire young life, and he's trying to get Gen Z engaged not only in politics, but with the Democratic Party. And let's be real here, he's got a little work to do because in the last election, while Gen Z voted for Kamala Harris, she only beat Trump by 6%. That's not good enough. And they went big time. That age group went big time for Biden 4 years earlier. And maybe the biggest difference between the 2020 election to this past one is that a larger share of the young male vote went towards Trump. Now, I know there's already some buyer's remorse if some of the polls are correct in showing how Gen Z voters have a high disapproval rating of Trump and Elon Musk. And Democrats must seize on that resentment. But Democrats must also plan on how to engage these young voters who felt like Democrats just weren't listening for a number of reasons and thought, hey, what the hell? I'll go with the guy who says that he'll try to lower prices on things. Also, maybe people like Austin Marsman will find ways to engage those who felt like there was no reason to vote. That's why I really believe sometimes, I don't know if you can change the minds of real hardcore MAGA voters. Some in the Democratic Party and some of those consultants really believe that can happen. But instead of paying attention to those people, I think you go after those who felt like there was no difference between both parties. So we'll talk about all that here in just a few moments when Austin Marsman joins me. So we know how President Musk, Dear Leader Trump, and MAGA Republicans are working to fulfill the Project 2025 agenda of destroying the safety net. When congressional Republicans passed their blueprint budget resolution recently, included in that blueprint was not only extending the 2017 tax cuts for Elon and his friends, which also, of course, exploded our national debt, but also included was $880 billion in cuts to programs like Medicaid and Medicare. While this was only a resolution, it was, though, the first step towards passing these tax cuts for the rich tech bro donor base while gutting essential programs for the rest of us. And they're going to try to pass the final version of this budget in the reconciliation process, meaning they would only need 50 votes in the Senate to pass it. There would be no 60-vote threshold. There would be no filibuster. They would just need 50 votes to pass it. And judging how nobody wants to cross Dear Leader or Elon Musk within the MAGA Republican Party, it looks quite possible this will all pass. Now, a Joint Economic Committee minority report from congressional Democrats says that in Michigan, if these cuts that Musk, Trump, and MAGA Republicans want, if those cuts are enacted, it would mean 800,000 Michiganders would lose their Medicaid. 800,000. Over 800,000. Also, 280,000 children in Michigan would lose their Medicaid. One in five elderly Michiganders would lose their nursing home care. And over 120,000 rural Michiganders would lose their Medicaid insurance. Now, on top of that, of course, we've got President Musk trying to dismantle Social Security, saying it's guilty of fraud and wasteful spending, while in reality, it is one of the best government programs, if not the best government programs that we've got. And we never hear Elon or others of his ilk say, you know, if we just raised the tax cap above the $196,000 threshold line, Social Security would remain solvent easily for decades. No, no, no. You see, to those guys, including Dear Leader Trump, they see anyone who's not part of the top 0.1% as useless. What is the point of those people? They see them as suckers, as Dear Leader once said about those who died in wars. They don't mind causing pain, a shock doctrine of pain, where they will destroy the village, buy it then all for cheap, get richer, and leave the rest of us scraping by. I truly believe that is part, actually, of this whole tariff war that Dear Leader's got going on with our closest friends. I mean, these guys know that they can easily manipulate the market and cash in later while destroying the lives of millions of Americans in the meantime. I really believe that is part of this whole point. But then that makes me ask the question, are these the populists that MAGA proclaim to be? I mean, there are a lot of MAGA voters who said they are the populist party. How is everything that I just described populist? But Project 2025 always said it was going after Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. Well, guess what, everyone? Here we are. Oh, and the Department of Education, too. But as we're seeing, many Americans across the country refuse to remain asleep while corporate authoritarianism is trying to run all over all of us. As we've seen from these Republican town halls all across the country, the people are pissed, and they are demanding answers, rightly so. But now Republicans are suddenly shying away from all of these town halls, which is strange, since I thought MAGA ideas were the popular ideas. This is exactly what the people want. Come on, Republicans, you guys always talk the tough talk. Where are you? I mean, that's why Michigan Congressman Bill Huizenga, John James, John Molinar, my congressman, Tim Walberg, Jack Bergman, and Congresswoman Lisa McClain are remaining in the shadows because their ideas are not popular. They are upsetting everyone. And rather than making their argument to the people, they just hide in the shadows and will vote to continue to hurt the same people they claim to represent. Just shows us how they talk the big talk all the time, but they can never walk the walk. You know what? There are many walking the walk, and groups like Indivisible Central Michigan are doing their best to connect with people throughout mid-Michigan and to help bring them together so we can fight back against these guys in bigger numbers. Now, Indivisible is a national organization that's main goal is to resist the Musk-Trump MAGA agenda. And there are Indivisible chapters all across the country and across the state of Michigan. Indivisible Central Michigan just got started here recently and is already growing fast, growing exponentially, and is holding events, meetings, and rallies. They even showed up with other like-minded mid-Michiganders to protest outside Congressman John Molinar's office recently, since, you know, he refuses to hold town halls. But they held a rally and a press conference this week in Mount Pleasant to highlight the danger that Republicans could cause on so many people if Republicans do indeed gut Medicaid, Social Security, and food stamp benefits. Indivisible Central Michigan brought up some individuals to talk about what would happen if Republicans get their way. And I was fortunate to attend the event, and I would like to share some audio with you because it really was a moving event in which Indivisible Central Michigan allowed those who've benefited from Medicaid to share their stories with everyone, like this one, where a parent explains how Medicaid helps her child, who's now adult with cerebral palsy, and helps her entire family get by. Listen.
It's a hard thing to realize that the best long-term plan you can come up with is to outlive your child. So how does having a Medicaid waiver help us as a family? The waiver supports us with trained nurses likely to catch problems early, keeping Allison healthier and less likely to need acute medical services. Having nurses allows Allison, now in her 30s, to interact with people other than her parents. Even without current help at night, the waiver allows us time to sleep, to leave the house, to run errands, to keep our household functioning, to volunteer with Girl Scouts, to go for a walk, see a friend, go bird watching, and even attend a political event. It helps us to continue to be able to care for Allison as we age with our own health challenges. We know we can no longer provide the care Allison now receives completely by herself for any length of time. Having the waiver keeps us hopeful, because we know we have hours available to get help at night if we can only find the nurses. Having in-home care supports our family values as we focus on quality of life. What would it mean to Allison and to us if any of Allison's Medicaid was cut? Despite Allison being on my very good Blue Cross Medicare Advantage plan, we rely extensively on Medicaid to cover the many things the plan doesn't. Allison's health and life depend on continued access to her ventilator, oxygen concentrator, pulse ox monitor, nebulizer machine for breathing treatments, cough assist device, airway clearance vest, suction machine, and feeding pump, as well as all the supplies needed for those machines. Medicaid also helps with some of Allison's extensive medication costs. Without waiver support, Allison's quality of care would be severely compromised. We know we would be unable to be on 24/7 and maintain the level of excellent care she now receives.
It was a bit windy in Mount Pleasant that day, as you could hear, but the part of the story you just heard is what we're fighting for and what MAGA is fighting to destroy. Here's another story from a disabled mid-Michigander who explained how Medicaid helped her afford her wheelchair and helped give her autonomy to pursue her academic dreams. And she also explained and did a good job explaining, and that's what I'm going to share with you here, the history of Social Security, Medicaid, and SNAP benefits.
In 1939, the foundation of SNAP food assistance benefits was foundation was built as a means to buy food from farmers and provide that food to organizations that could help hunger relief agencies and local communities. In 1939, it turned into providing stamps to citizens so that they could exchange those stamps for food and produce. This program was officially signed into law as the Food Stamp Act in 1964, ensuring access to food for low-income families and parents. The Medicare and Medicaid programs, officially titled as the Social Security Amendments of 1965, were signed into law by Lyndon B. Johnson, the 36th President of the United States, on July 30th, 1965. Both were created to be on health care safety needs, with Medicare assigned to take care of the elderly as prices increase, while Medicaid became a state-run program to assist low-income families and individuals. Children, parents, pregnant women, seniors, and the disabled with health coverage. Medicaid is the only insurance that pre-existing conditions cannot be denied and covers the hundreds of thousands of dollars costs for needed medical equipment, specialists, medication. For example, an electric wheelchair allowing for self-autonomy costs tens of thousands of dollars. It is easily the price of a car.
Now remember, when FDR proposed Social Security, it was deemed communist. When JFK proposed Medicare, it was socialism run amok. I mean, Ronald Reagan made a record all about how Medicare was socialism. And there were many who thought when LBJ passed Medicare and Medicaid, Chairman Mao was going to be walking right down Main Street USA anytime now. Well, that didn't happen. And those strong progressive ideals are some of the most popular government programs in the country today. And that's why many Republican congressmen and congresswomen refuse to hold town halls. They know that to be true. Here's another speaker explaining how Medicaid helped his ailing father.
Today, he is still alive. That is only because of Medicaid and the services that he was able to acquire. He had lost his job at Dent Refuse when they were bought out by a larger corporation, and he did not have benefits available at small businesses. That's where a lot of people work at. Small business is the backbone of our community, and they oftentimes do not have the privilege of providing health care benefits to their employees. Introduce Medicaid, health care for every working citizen in America. He was able to make it to doctor's appointments. He went through extremely rigorous cancer regimen in order to address it, and he was able to return back to work years late, a couple year and a half afterwards, after getting a clear bill of health. I find it ironic that the party that looking to take away the benefits of so many millions of Americans, they want to raise a trade war with our neighbors and with China over a fentanyl crisis. Where do these people that are facing their disease get their treatments from? From Medicaid. How? None of this makes sense to me, and I will do everything in my power to raise awareness, to make sure people know that we have power. We the people have power to stand up to this injustice.
Now, that last speaker also gave a great point that I didn't play for you. He said that we are also fighting to ensure that those who back MAGA also receive this kind of important care. You see, with us, cruelty is not the point.
So we are here because the House Republicans voted for this, and it's going to kick millions off of Medicaid, food assistance, housing, and other life-saving programs, all to fund tax breaks to make the richest even richer. But we've got news from Molinar and every other Trump enabler. We are paying attention, and we're not going to remain silent. These are disabled children and veterans, seniors who need home care, and people in poverty who just want to feed their families. We are so grateful to have the few people here today who can share their stories and be the face of the millions of Americans who who will suffer under this budget. It's not about waste and fraud like they claim. It's about enriching the already wealthy. It's not the government we want. We don't want a government for the rich. We want a government for the rest of us.
The last speaker you heard there was Alice Chiku, who's part of the leadership team for Indivisible Central Michigan. And Alice was nice enough to talk with me for a few minutes after the event.
So what's Indivisible all about, for those who may not be real aware of Indivisible?
Indivisible is a nonpartisan organization. It sprang up around 2016, 2017. It is pro-democracy, pro-constitution, pro-rule of law. And right now it is anti-Trump agenda.
And how did you get everything started with the Central Michigan chapter of it?
Well, a couple of women, which you see in the background or here in the background, were so upset with the things going on in Washington that they just kind of met at a bar and got together and said, what should we do? They found the Indivisible National Organization and called a couple of meetings, and a friend of mine brought me to one in late February, and here I am.
Yeah,
we came together, and the first thing to do was our local congresspeople, Jerry Nyer and Roger Houck, were holding a town hall meeting. So we went to that meeting to meet with them and ask about what they were doing about the things going on with the federal government. And we just kind of grew from there. We went from maybe a dozen people to we've got over 200 now on our mailing list.
Oh, wait, and so that was only in just a couple of months?
Oh, not even a couple of months. That was late February.
Oh, wow. Wow, so that just shows you, in a way, just how involved people are really getting and paying attention.
There is a lot of frustration out there. A lot of people who voted for Donald Trump didn't vote for Elon Musk, and they didn't vote for what's actually going on. And so there's a lot of frustration and anger.
What did you hope to accomplish today with the event that you held here?
We wanted to make people aware about Medicaid and SNAP and how Medicaid impacts the community and to what extent it does. I think people don't realize that it supports disabled veterans. It's not just for poor people. And the majority of people on Medicaid actually work. So it really is a lifeline and a support system. And that's what we kind of wanted to inform the community about.
Oh, very good. And here's the thing is that we're here in Central Michigan, a lot of rural area here. I think I read somewhere that if Medicaid is cut, that it would harm like over 120,000 at least rural Michiganders just from the start if it's cut.
I believe you. I don't know what the actual number is. I believe you. And Isabella County, believe it or not, has the highest poverty rate in all of Michigan. Right. So it's very critical to our community.
So if you have any advice for people who are like, oh, I don't exactly know what to do. Seems like maybe for those people who are living in red areas and red rural areas and feel like they're alone, what advice would you have for them to do, and maybe and how to connect with other people?
Okay. Number one, you are not alone. There is frustration all over. So look at indivisible.org. It's a national organization, but through there you can find us or maybe another Indivisible group that is closer to your location. I know there's one in Traverse City. There's one in West Michigan. So there's one in Ann Arbor. So there are all over. We are connected to the national organization as well. So they support us with tactics and ideas and events. The other thing that you can do that's just really critical is call your representative, call your senators. It's fivecalls.org or a Five Calls app. And that's five, the number five calls. And they will help you with a script, what to say, and they'll give you phone numbers on who to call. Call your Democrats. Call your Republicans. Let them know that you either like what they're doing or that you don't like what's going on. If they don't hear from us, they don't know, and they assume that everything's okay. And it isn't. This is not normal. This is not okay.
Now, other than me needing to invest in a wind buffer for my microphone, Alice brought up some great points, especially that last point of never feeling alone. And as you heard Alice say, their group has grown fast in just 6 weeks. So we're not alone no matter where you are, okay? You are not alone no matter where you are. And this is how grassroots organizing begins, just like MAGA Republicans did it throughout the years. And what I love about Indivisible is that they pay attention to national and local politics, federal and state politics, and they also don't want you forgetting about local politics, like in your city and county commissions and school boards too. I mean, that's where change happens fast. So thanks again to everyone at Indivisible Central Michigan for having me on there that day, and I hope to attend some other events. I will provide a link to Indivisible Central Michigan, and I'll also provide a link to the national chapter, so that way you can find different Indivisible chapters throughout the state of Michigan. But again, organizing and connecting is key towards building a real Democratic and populist movement. And that must happen also within the Democratic Party as well. And that's what I'll talk about with Austin Marsman, chair of Young Democrats of Michigan, right after these words. You are listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
As Jessica said, if you ever have show topic ideas or guest ideas for a future episode, just email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. If you ever want me to help promote an event or a gathering that's happening across the state of Michigan, again, just email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if there's an event that you not only want people knowing about, but maybe you'd like me to be there as well, email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Joining Michigan's premier progressive podcast right now is Austin Marsman. Austin was recently elected as chair of Young Democrats of Michigan, and he's working on growing and finding organizers for this part of the state Democratic Party. Now, Austin recently served as the youth vice chair of the Michigan Democratic Party and has been involved in his community in a variety of ways, including on the Martin Public School Board in Allegan County on the west side of the state. Austin recently ran against MAGA Republican Matt Hall for the 42nd State House District last fall. Of course, Hall would go on to win, become the House Speaker in the State House, which next to Trump winning, I have to tell everybody, was perhaps the next to worst news I had to deal with. And I'm sure I am not alone. But despite that setback, Austin Marsman refuses to give in to cynicism and despair. He dusted himself off and got right back into the political ring as he works on attracting young people back towards the Democratic Party. Austin Marsman, thanks so much for spending some of your time with us. And thanks for coming back here on Left of Lansing.
Hey, great to be back, Pat.
So, like I said, you ran a hard-fought campaign against Matt Hall, and after the way that this election turned out, I was wondering how long that it took for you to kind of, you know, regather your wits and your mental strength to want to keep on fighting, because I can tell you, at least for me, it took a little bit of time.
You know, Pat, we lost the White House, we lost control of the Senate, and we didn't win Congress. And then here in Michigan, we lost the state house and key local races all across the state. So it was comforting to know that I wasn't the only one who lost. It was a pretty bad year all around. That being said, really grateful for the supporters and everyone who had a word of encouragement afterwards. It's not easy to lose, especially to someone like Matt Hall, but I knew that I would be involved in one way or another going forward.
Despite losing, I mean, what did you learn from your campaign and what are you most proud of?
I learned that we are a lot more similar than we are different. A lot of us have the same struggles and the same worries that keep us up at night. What I took from the campaign was that there's a lot more everyday people out there who share our concerns. And, you know, it was hard to combat the influence of dark money in our race and then just the national wave, I guess. But I firmly believe that this district that I ran in to represent still deserves good representation, and they're going to continue fighting for that.
Like I said in the intro, and we were just talking about with that first question, you know, it didn't take you too long to kind of regather yourself and decide to, you know, get back into the fight. Can you tell everybody now exactly what you're doing? Because you were elected the chair of the Young Democrats of Michigan. So I was wondering if you could talk about that position a little bit more and how you were able to get elected.
Sure. So I have been involved in the party for a while. I shared this last time we talked, but my parents always encouraged me to find a way to get involved. That was from a young age, right? I interned on my first campaign at the age of 18. Being a Democrat was something that was natural for me. And I've been to a few party conventions and was active as much as I could be. I served as the Michigan Democratic Party's youth vice chair and helped get funding for our college students to organize on their campuses in 2023. So I've been really active there. And then when the current chair came to me and said that he's not running for re-election, I looked around and said, if not me, who? And put together a broad coalition of folks to run at the party convention in February. And we were successful in that. So now I chair the Young Democrats of Michigan, which is the youth arm of the party, which encompasses folks between the ages of 16 and 36.
So you said that you were able to kind of build a coalition, because I know when it comes to Democrats, obviously, it's, as they say, the cliche, right? It's a big tent because there are a lot of different interests out there. How were you able to, you know, build these relationships and build these coalitions to help support you?
Our coalition, like I said, is great. We have folks from the Bay Region, Metro Detroit, Northern Michigan. It was a lot of conversations, as any campaign is. Those conversations got us the support of labor, got us the support of the high school and college Democrats. And they showed out in force. There was about 200 young people in the room, which was really cool to see in Detroit. But that energy didn't stop there. We opened applications for appointed positions on the executive committee and had almost 100 people apply within less than a week. I'm really proud of the conversations we've had, the relationships we've built. And if people think that young people are discouraged and apathetic, they're wrong. They're ready to fight back.
Well, you say that, and I believe it. I know that there are a lot of young people who are ready to fight back. But in my introduction, I said that you're working on trying to attract younger voters to the Democratic Party or back to the Democratic Party. But Austin, do you think part of your job is to maybe also go after those young voters who didn't even bother to turn out in 24 for whatever reason, because the Center of Information and Research for Civic Learning and Engagement at Tufts University, known as CIRCLE, I know you probably keep up to date with that, it showed that 42% of 18 to 29-year-olds voted in 24, this is across the country, of course, compared with 52% who showed up in 2020. So that was a bit of a drop there. It seems like there is a large number of people out there who could be reached if young Democrats such as yourself are willing to go after them. I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, Austin, it's not just trying to maybe attract those who thought, oh, I guess maybe I'll vote for Trump this time because what's the difference? But also, I would think that going after those who feel disillusioned by the whole process alone would be, that's also a good group to go after in terms of the youth vote.
Yeah, I mentioned those conversations that I've had, and many of the young activists on the ground that I've talked to felt disconnected, unsupported, unheard. And that's a mistake that we can't repeat as we look to these local elections and as we look to 2026 and beyond. So I see my job really as getting these young people to have a home in the Young Democrats of Michigan and to realize their voice.
What would you say is the biggest challenge in reaching people in that demographic?
You know, looking back at 24 as kind of an example, right, we're still doing the postmortem, if you will, but I think Democrats struggled to own the messaging battle on issues that impact young people. We didn't speak loudly or clearly enough on policies that matter, right? Like affordable housing, climate action, and education. Bernie mentioned Warren this recently about what Trump didn't say at his joint address. Young people need to hear that we're fighting for them. And in so many cases, we didn't hear that.
What does that tell you? You just brought up Bernie Sanders appearing in Warren, Michigan. I think what is being reported, around 10,000 people attended that event. What does that tell you just by seeing the sheer number of people who are just going to hear this? How old's Bernie? 83? Something like that, 83-year-old guy. You know, what does that say to you when you see numbers like that? Does that give you encouragement that, hey, we could really try to do something here in Michigan if we kind of focus, maybe like you said, on policy and on working class issues?
I think so. I think the draw with Bernie specifically, and I was there, I was standing up on the top area there. What I'll say is this, that Bernie taps into this hunger folks have for authenticity in our politicians. He really tells it how it is. And I think if Democrats want to be successful moving forward, we got to cut out some of the bullshit. We got to stand up for the working class and talk about policy that impacts them.
You sound like me a bit, that you think that Democrats kind of lost the message there, especially in this last election.
I think we fell short. Organizing isn't transactional. We have to show up year round and build those relationships, especially in tougher areas. But overall, right, I don't think we take any community for granted. Democrats need to be seen as partners and folks who are doing the work, not just campaigners. That is the missing piece.
Mm. Let's talk about what you are hoping to accomplish now in your new role in the short term. What are some of the things that you would really like to concentrate here?
There's some just structural things that we're working on, but building up membership, like I mentioned, making sure folks have that home, organizing in more places with more people. I'm excited to go out and knock some doors. That will be everywhere from Detroit to the Upper Peninsula to over here on the West Side, advocating for real policy change so young people can get that experience of going to Lansing and talking with their legislators about the issues that matter to them. And I mentioned messaging, but engaging year round in a messaging, a winning message is some of the key points of what we hope to do. But I think it's also calling out the lawmakers, right? When you talk about some of these issues, it doesn't make sense, some of the things the Republicans are pushing forward. So we need to call them out.
What are you getting here from all of these Republican town halls, where not only are you seeing people attending these town halls and, being angry and letting their representatives know that they're not being represented and that they don't want unelected people like Elon Musk determining their future. Is that giving you some hope? And also, what do you think about a lot of these Republicans here in Michigan, congressional Republicans who are just simply refusing to even deal with their constituents?
You know, Pat, it's funny that these folks don't want to hold in-person town halls. It's actually really disappointing. You have folks like Bill Huizenga, John James, and Tom Barrett. James and Barrett, you know, served our country. The veterans that I've talked to, at least, they hear Trump cozying up to Putin, and that's frightening. It just shakes you to your core. And then Congressman Huizenga, who hasn't held a town hall since 2017, well before redistricting, people are right to expect the representative to come and meet with them and to hear their concerns and to have it be a two-way street where their congressman can talk about their work, what they're seeing on the ground. Our democracy thrives when we can have those open discussions. And Bill Huizenga was asking folks to stop calling his office. And, you know, Bill, if you listen to the Left of Lansing podcast, you have a job to do, and we're going to keep calling you. I have the number here. It's 202-225-4401 for anyone in the 4th Congressional District. But I do think it's important that we contact our elected officials, not just when we have a problem, but maybe even when we agree with them.
And that also goes for my Congressman John Molnar as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need better representation. I hope that's what comes out of this, is that folks are upset, whether it's the federal workers who are getting laid off or it's the folks who feel the strain of rising costs due to these tariffs.
Austin, just getting back to finding ways to connect with younger voters and messaging towards the youth vote. Is that primarily dealing with social media, or are there other ways to connect with young voters that you think Democrats could be doing a better job?
You know, it's all of the above. It's social media. I don't want to become a competitor to the Left of Lansing podcast, but maybe a podcast.
More the merrier. More the merrier. That'd be great. Right.
No, but I'm serious. We have to communicate wherever folks are. We held a social before the election at Kelly's up in Lansing. Met with folks there. We're going all over the state, creating regional clubs and talking with folks. I think building community and making sure that people see the Democratic Party and know that they can be part of it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I wouldn't be doing my job here, Austin, if I didn't give you a chance to, you know, kind of give a grade on your state representative, Matt Hall. I mean, sorry, House Speaker Matt Hall. Oh, God. Anyway, give us a grade on his performance thus far, and if you're surprised at all with the moves that he has made so far as Speaker.
You know, Pat, I would give the Speaker a C. He has done some things that I agree with, actually. I always said it would be a cold day in hell when I would agree with Matt Hall, but here we are. He's done some good things, but he's also, you know, he's held up these 9 bills that were common sense bills. He's held them up from going to the governor's desk. He's still focused on this politics of blame instead of taking responsibility. And it's disappointing to see our lawmakers interacting in such a way. But, you know, I think it bodes well for us taking back the House in 26 if he wants to continue his petulant, childish games, if you will.
You bring up a point, and right when you said you'd give him a C, and my brain first went, huh, okay, that was generous. But I will say, because you said, you know, you even found maybe here or there a moment of where you could find some agreement with him. I actually don't mind what he says about not wanting to give all of this money towards corporate welfare and all this that we have been doing through. And this isn't just Governor Whitmer. This happened also during Governor Snyder and Engler and all that. And I think there are a lot of Michiganders, and I've heard it from people on the left. I've heard it on people on the right who feel like, OK, it doesn't seem like we're getting a bang for our buck with this money that we give to corporate subsidies. So I hear him on that. I just would like to actually see him, you know, do something on that. And I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm skeptical. Anyone who knows Matt Hall in Lansing knows he's not a serious person. And if they believe he is, they're wrong. when I see changed behavior, I will consider giving him a higher grade. But I think for now, he's earned a C.
And I just want to bring up too, since I don't want anybody emailing me and saying, how could you not bring this up? Of course, there was that whole state budget process where he and the Republicans kind of ran through that $20 billion bare bones budget. And he's saying it's to serve as a stopgap in budget negotiations. And I loved what Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia said. You know, she's up there in Traverse City. And it's something that you kind of just said too. That's why I wanted to use this quote, if you don't mind, Austin. She said, they cut at-risk funding with this vote. They cut school meals. They cut rural transportation equity and no conversation with the stakeholders. They are just adding to chaos when Michiganders want thoughtful, measured negotiation. And you just brought that up about Matt Hall, is that sometimes he's more interested in the chaos.
Yeah, they had, what, 30 minutes to read that bill?
Yeah.
And we're talking about real school children who were up in the gallery watching their school funding get cut. We're talking about kids who are just trying to get an education. I think it even cut school meals. I saw a meme that was just, Matt doesn't care, right? It's mind-boggling because a lot of legislators go to Lansing to help people. And I think we saw that budget come through and it was the opposite.
And usually is, I think, when it comes to MAGA Republicans in many ways. Well, listen, I know we're about running out of time, but Austin, how can younger people get more involved in what you're trying to do in hopes of growing the youth vote in the Democratic Party? What would you have people do?
First, it's get engaged. Find us on social media, Young Democrats of Michigan, for sure. But also get engaged in the local community. Find an issue you care about and contact your lawmaker. Give them a call. Make sure you're engaged there. I think the last thing we should do is turn off and disengage in this moment. It's going to take all of us. These next 4 years are going to be dark, right? That's the bad news. But the good news is we get to be the heroes of our story. We get to decide what comes next.
The good news, too, is here in Michigan, we have, you could look at it this way, 2 years that we could actually start to really make things better, less than 2 years with the 26 elections. My last question for you here, Austin, are the young people ready for this kind of fight? And I know I'm generalizing and I'm just seeing, you know, what I'm seeing maybe on social media or what I'm seeing in news reports and all that. But it does seem like on TV and online, I had to hear this from my dad because he calls me up and says, hey, I saw these rallies happening, you know, at this Republican town hall or this rally that happened in Ann Arbor or wherever. And he says, it's good to see the people, but I'm seeing them more with white hair. And I'm not really seeing as many young people at these events. Do you think the young people are ready for this time?
I sure as hell do. At the Bernie rally, I was really surprised by the average age of folks who were there. You know, young people in this moment are rightfully upset, you know, whether they're going to the grocery store and seeing the cost of eggs or they're just trying to pay for their college education, you know, looking at buying a house, you name it, we're rightfully upset. And we need to see more politicians who care about making progress on these issues. And if not those politicians, then it'll be us.
All right. Austin Marsman, chair of Young Democrats of Michigan. Thank you so very much for being on the show this week. And hey, please come back. The door is open whenever you want to come in. Okay.
It's always a pleasure, Pat.
Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
Thanks again to Austin Marsman for being on here this week. You know, people like Austin have quite the job ahead of them because male Gen Z voters are drifting further to the right, if you believe the polls. And that is something that has to be blunted and blunted pretty fast here. And that moves on to my Left of Lansing last call. I'm not sure if many of you have seen parts of this. Maybe some of you have, but I want to share this soundbite with you. Progressive talk show host Sam Cedar visited media company Jubilee as it invited Sam to debate 20 MAGA-loving young conservatives for over an hour. It's a pretty interesting show, and sometimes it switches up where a conservative sits in the middle and 20 progressives each take turns debating a MAGA person as well. If you haven't watched it, or at least part of it, I implore you to watch this episode because it'll give you a crystal clear idea of what is happening on the MAGA side. Now, here's the clip that went viral in which a young MAGA male debates Sam Cedar on DEI programs. And this young MAGA person is so confident when he says Sam is wrong when Sam correctly notes that federal agencies like the FDA do not get tax cuts. Listen.
I'm talking about Trump's rescission of these orders on these agencies.
If you received a tax cut as an employer, wouldn't you hire a person of color?
Dude.
If you could pay them less?
Listen, we're talking about government agencies that do not get tax cuts. They don't.
They don't.
No.
They do. They absolutely do.
I'm talking about
and public sector gets tax cuts when you hire a person of color.
Government agencies don't pay taxes. Government agencies operate on, are funded by the government.
That is not true. That is not true.
If you watch that clip, the young MAGA dude is so cocky and is so confident. It doesn't matter what kinds of facts Sam presents to him. The guy knows deep down inside that he knows more and that he is better. I mean, that's the part that I've experienced far too many times in my previous life in talk radio. You see, to MAGA folks, they're in the know. They know the truth. Because, you know, they saw it on social media. They're smarter than everyone, and they know the full truth. Oh, and it doesn't really matter the age. I know I'm focusing on young people here, but it really doesn't matter the age. I have argued with MAGA people of all ages, and they all sound alike. I can't tell you the countless right-wingers, or what we now know as MAGA today, I can't tell you how many sound just like that guy. When Sam tells them that government agencies don't get tax cuts, the guy believes he's got a huge win over Sam, and that he's proven how stupid liberals truly are. Yet, that clip went viral for a number of reasons, most of all because of how wrong that guy was and how he looked so confident while being wrong. It is sad because no matter what kinds of facts you present, they won't listen. They won't listen at all. You're the fool for not knowing the real truth. Now, I said it's just not the young folks, because listen to this clip from Republican Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina as he took to the House floor to defend corporate authoritarianism, specifically President Elon Musk.
Main thing they will try to get a concession on is to defund, they keep saying, the billionaire Elon Musk. I'm sorry, Elon Musk didn't make it from government. He made it from producing a product.
Yes, yes. Tesla, SpaceX. Yeah, that's not exactly true, dude. Elon benefited from $38 billion in corporate welfare. $38 billion. Which has me wondering, back here in Michigan, I've heard some MAGA Republican leaders like State House Speaker Matt Hall, which I just talked about with Austin Marsman, or Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt, who's also running for governor. I've heard these guys decry how we spent too much money in the SOAR Fund, which is a fund that was essentially a corporate slush fund in the hopes of attracting businesses here in the state. You've heard me be critical of that fund many times. And they're criticizing it because Whitmer fought hard to put a lot of money in there. And hey, you know what? I criticize it like I just said. And I believe Democrats should have perhaps fought harder to pare back some of that spending in that corporate slush fund. But the corporate welfare, is alive and well in both parties in Michigan here throughout the years. And while it's nice to suddenly hear some of these MAGA Republicans sound like Bernie Sanders, I haven't exactly heard Matt Hall or Eric Nesbitt criticize Elon Musk for the billions of dollars he collected via government through the years. Well, we haven't really heard them criticize Elon Musk on anything. And that includes gutting and slashing VA programs, USAID, which helps people around the world and helps our American farmers, our Michigan farmers. I haven't heard them criticize Elon Musk for slashing the Corporate Financial Protection Bureau, which collected over $20 billion for Americans wronged by corporate greed. And now he wants to slash Social Security, and they are silent. That's why I don't put a whole lot of stock in their anti-corporate bluster, their populist bluster. MAGA is anything but populist. They are pro-corporate, and they are for corporate authoritarianism. And they will work along with Dear Leader Trump and President Musk on working to decimate Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, food stamps. They are working to decimate the working class.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks again to Austin Marsman, chair of Young Democrats of Michigan, and also thanks to Alice Chiku and all of Indivisible Central Michigan for having me join them in their Save Medicaid and SNAP benefits event in Mount Pleasant. You see, right there are a couple of examples of people who are getting into the organizing and messaging game, and that's exactly what we've got to do here on our side. For far too long, the right wing has been outstanding in the messaging war and in the long political war, the long war. They just don't go to win a battle. They've been fighting for a long time to win the long war. Keep that in mind. We've got to keep getting better at it and making sure that our leaders or so-called leaders are hearing us. Remember, you can email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com at any time. And remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.